The following podcast contains adult language, explicit content, and original opinions.
All content is the opinion of Comics Brew and no one else.
It is meant for mature audiences only, so be warned.
All right, I hope you guys are all ready. Let's do this.
Okay.
Comics Brew, let's go.
Is that it?
Yep.
No.
What kind of lead are we following?
None. That's, the end. Let's go.
That is the lamest that lame stuff.
The worst idea for an intro ever.
At least I had an idea. You guys didn't have one at all.
I usually come up with all of them.
That's my intro idea. Fuck you guys. We're using it.
Actually, it's not bad. Yeah. Welcome back.
Heck, I'm ready.
Welcome back, Charles, man.
No, I'm good.
Okay. Welcome back to Comics Brew, episode 231.
231?
Yep.
Suck yeah.
this is the All Thor All the Time podcast.
Pretty much, that's all we're going to be talking about. All Thor all the time. Just Ragnarokin' and rolling.
Thor!
What's gross is that he sneezed all over the mic to do that.
It's my mic. Fuck it.
Yeah, you're the only one that uses it?
For the most part, actually.
Yeah, whatever, man. That's gross.
Jesus. Well, I'm Tyler.
I'm Josh.
I'm Sneezy McSneezeface.
Sneezy McSneezeface.
Sometimes known as Adam.
AKA, always known as.
Beer here.
Sneezy McSneezeface. So,
you guys are like the Elysian brothers right now.
Yeah, so I actually have a beer this week. I know that's pretty few and far between what happens.
He was driving with me.
Yeah, pretty much, actually. And I picked up a... God damn it. No, I'm good. I'm good. I picked up an Elysian Pumpkachino. I love this beer. It's obviously a winter seasonal, or fall seasonal, rather, by Elysian. It tastes like pumpkins and coffee. And I'm a fan.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be my first. Yeah. It's my first of the season, but will not be molested.
Yeah, it's good shit. You know, I don't know if
it sounded like you will not be molested.
I don't know if I've had a pumpkin beer this year.
I have.
Here, let's fix that. Have a drink.
All right, cool.
I think I had a couple.
I sneezed on it.
That's gross.
Yeah, I sneezed on it.
Oh, that's way better than my beer. I grabbed an Elysian Snail Bones IPA from their Manic series. I did my usual deal, and I saw a cool logo and got it.
It's a pretty sweet fucking logo.
It is a sweet-ass logo. You should look
it
up. Dope.
It'll be on the website. Don't worry, folks.
It's not a great beer. It's... Oh,
it's
God.
Okay.
I should have read it.
The best
it's,
things come in shitty packages.
Grapefruit, peach, guava, and grape notes.
I liked it.
I mean, it's not the worst, but it's not great.
You've had it before?
No. That's why I tried it.
Oh, you tried it even. Didn't even see you try it. Most people are pooping.
Grapefruit is not a grapefruit.
I was up here standing up laughing just like 2 minutes ago.
Okay, I didn't. Whoosh.
Yeah, maybe like 4 minutes ago.
I think he's over here sneezing.
Can I try it?
It's when he didn't sneeze. You're like, I'm good.
it's a decent beer. It's a real IPA-y beer. Although that... Lion motherfucker that I checked out with was like, yeah, even non-IPA lagers are like this. It's not super
It's not
heavy.
Super cold.
Oh, man, it's
either.
Like he was trying to make a sale or something.
Yeah, like, you motherfucker, I'm already at your checkout stand. You don't need to sell me on the beer. And also, don't lie to me. This is really IPA-y.
It is IPA as a motherfucker.
It's IPA. So before I get into my beers, I went to the Moxie release party.
Yeah.
I got the Moxie shirt.
Oh, nice. Oh.
Lisa wanted me to point out that if you two had joined us, you would have also gotten Moxie shirts.
Well,
I was busy doing something.
I was getting home from work, and then I went to go see Thor.
I did both.
Yeah, but you got off earlier tonight.
I do. It's awesome.
Thursday. Nothing.
That was also the first night I'd been home in like a week, so I had to take a bunch of I had to go to my mom's, get a bunch of shit, and then go back home. So by the time I was home, like, there's no way I was going to make the release party.
No worries. Just saying. She wanted to point that out. That's all I'm saying.
Well, shit.
But if you wanted, Lisa said that she had Moxie, like, they were trying to brew an IPA for people that don't like IPAs.
Well, I want to try
it. And it was delicious. It was, like, nuanced and hops were undertone. It is only out for this weekend, basically.
Really?
Yeah, it's for Jet City Comics Show.
Oh,
yeah,
that's
right.
The,
that's today.
I don't know why. I forgot about that.
But it is, it will be on tap around the area. You can check out georgetownbeer.com. It'll be in the south end, though.
Well, I could probably still find it somewhere.
I live there.
The logo is done by Travis.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. I did not know that. That's fucking rad.
He did last year's Jet City.
He did last year's Jet City cover.
Yeah, yeah.
And he didn't do the Moxie logo. The Moxie logo was just
I mean, he did the same Moxie girl for the Jet City.
Yeah, and that her name is Tina.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she's a lovely, lovely lady.
Oh,
so my beers, though. I got a Rogue Cold Brew IPA because, little known fact, we're recording this one earlier today, and I just got done drinking some coffee. So I'm like, fuck it, I'm going to have a beer with some coffee in it.
Yeah, why not?
And it's a nice, like, ease into it.
Okay.
And then I got Irish Death.
Because
it's Irish Death. That stuff is good. Like, I always considered it a porter, but it's a strong ale.
I did not know that. I always thought it was a porter. I never took the time to read the label. No, it's shit's fire.
I've never thought about what kind of beer it is other than good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mocha Death is another strong ale. It's just a mocha chocolate strong ale.
God, I love Mocha Death. I think I only had one this year.
I've had one. I bought two. I had one.
So we all had one this year.
Yeah. It was Mocha Death all around. Before we get into the news, though, I want to give a shout out to our main man on Twitter, Eugene Tierney. Not only did he love our talk about The Martian, he says he loves The Martian novel. The first half of the book is just Mark's POV, and the second half jumps between Mars and Earth. And he was right.
That's pretty rad.
And then the Punisher story that we were talking about, that's the old grandma and stuff, and how it like meets up with Garth Ennis's old grandma in Preacher.
Yeah.
So the Punisher story is called Welcome Back, Frank, and the boss is Ma Nucci.
Yeah.
And, That's all of that.
Thank you for fact checking.
He also says keep making the podcast and I'll keep listening. And he says that we might need to work out a beer trade for an episode.
That's it. Done. Show's over. Once we have continual listeners, I'm done.
That shit's played out.
Yeah, no. Too mainstream. I'm over it.
God.
Jesus Christ. If you ever become that,
dude, I'll keep doing podcast. I'm down for a beer trade. That sounds
like
fun.
Yeah, that sounds like
for show.
We should do like a regional thing? If we had enough people that like listened and responded, we could just be like, pick our beers for next week.
Actually, cool. That they should do that. I would appreciate it if they did that. That way we wouldn't be like, I didn't know what to get.
So yeah, I got another Mocha Death.
Well, speak for yourself, because I always try to grab something new.
I've gotten variety in my life.
Yeah, I always go and grab stuff, but I usually end up like something barrel-aged, but something I haven't had before, but usually something weird and barrel-aged.
Fruity last week? I don't know what you had last week.
He's always fucking fruity.
Anyway, let's get into Adam's news.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so a couple of news stories here. First one, Neil Adams, he's going to be receiving an award from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce in the coming weeks. It's the IPA Champion Award for Excellence and Creativity. Among many things, one of the things that he is winning this for is his work to get Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster pension and recognition for Superman.
Which is pretty rad.
Yeah.
Which was his push. That was exactly. Like during the height of his career in the 70s and 80s, that was his push.
Yep. And right. I mean, the whole thing is like, literally it's for creating and protecting IPs is what this award is for. So it makes sense that with how much of a battle he put up for the creators of Superman, that he would definitely get it. So that's great for him, and that's
good for recognition too.
I
like official government recognition, which I thought I didn't even know this existed.
Neither did I.
So this is a cool one. Neil Adams, the spark of this story. Neil Adams sent a letter to Beanie Cool. Yeah. Neil Adams here. Put a pin in this, and so the art for this is a pin,
which it will also be on the webpage.
I hope so. In 2 weeks in Washington, D.C., the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is going to be bestowing the IP, Internet Intellectual Properties Champion Award for Excellence in Creativity, and apparently they have one for me. God knows why. This event is about the innovative and creative industries from fashion to film, from technology to medicine, coming together to recognize some of the real luminaries in creativity and innovation. Maybe it will help me and all of us push work made for hire out of the contracts quicker. Fingers crossed. Neither.
Yes, which I'd absolutely, I mean, hopefully it helps, but work made for hire should definitely be pushed out of contracts, man. Like, get those people benefits. Like, they're fucking doing amazing work and making companies millions of dollars.
Last year, the award went to Mark McGrath, reality show host and lead singer of the U.S. band Sugar Ray, and British songwriter and producer Billy Morris. And other winners include U.S. Senator Orrin Hatch, who received an award for public service in recognition of his advocacy role in promoting strong IP protection of American creators, and Danny Marty, the U.S. Intellectual Property Enforcement Coordinator at the White House, as IP Administration Champion. Wow.
So yeah, it's
some cool rewards, but then you're like, Mark fucking McGrath, really?
Yeah, what?
You ever see the Scooby-Doo movie, the live action ones?
No. So long ago. Oh,
okay, Mark McGrath has a role in that.
Oh God,
he's the singer at the fucking resort they go to.
Do you guys ever see the video of Mark McGrath? The some paparazzi took of him, and so he was coming out of a club, and somebody went, hey, there's the lead singer of Sugar Gay. And he was just like, oh yeah, Sugar Gay, huh? And he turns around and farts at the guy and then walks away. That is it. That is the whole thing.
That's awesome.
Beautiful. That's absolutely beautiful.
Yeah. So that's that. Good for Neil Adams. Moving on, though, some more comic book news, although this is from the world of movies.
I kind of like this one because Tyler said, if at first you don't succeed, try again or some shit like that.
Yeah,
well,
so
if Sinestro doesn't succeed,
maybe try Shazam.
Yeah.
So Mark Strong, who was Sinestro in the terrible Green Lantern movie, although arguably he was one of the better parts of that movie.
Oh, he was the best part.
He was the best part. Him and Kilowog, but Kilowog got one scene and Mark Strong got like four.
Yeah.
But the best thing of that entire
movie is probably when his costume changes after the credits.
He doesn't even say anything.
Yeah. No, that was the worst part.
Yeah. Because they were like, we're banking on a number two.
Yeah, no, that was never going to happen. No. So Mark Strong is talking in talks to join Shazam.
Yeah.
As another villain.
He plays a great villain. He plays a really good bad guy.
Most recently, Mark Strong's been in Kingsman as Merlin.
Yes.
He's the guy that helps him out. He's got all the tech stuff. He's
okay,
like,
let me just rephrase this. Mark Strong is just a really good actor.
No, he is, but in Sherlock, he was a villain. Yep. In Sherlock Holmes, actually, he was a villain. In Green Lantern, he was a villain. Normally, he's got that, like, sinister fucking demeanor, right?
Absolutely.
He's got the weight to play an evil person, I guess.
Absolutely.
He just brings it to the scenery, but he talks to me, Thaddeus Savanna.
Savannah's always portrayed as this, like, almost sickly thin,
yep,
bald, pasty professor who's a genius, but he's out to get Billy Batson's magic.
Yeah, but in the latest, in the new 52 version of Shazam, they kind of changed him.
Archaeologist a little bit or something?
Well, I think they added that. He's still basically the same personality-wise, except they changed the look of him.
So he
is actually a little more, he's like a Mark Strong kind of look.
He looks a little bit like Lex Luthor a little bit.
Yeah,
too.
He's not so much this like withered little dude.
Because you remember like 52, he's like, I'm going to be a bad guy.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, shit, even in like Final Crisis, he was like this hunched over little dude.
Yeah.
But in the new 52, he's kind of, they've updated his look a little bit. So he's like an old withered Lex Luthor, but still healthy.
Not decrepit and dying on the verge of death.
Yeah, my point there is that Mark Strong, he fucking looks like it.
He does.
This is some good casting.
Mm-hmm. I like it. Savannah's a good character, too.
Yeah, Dr. Savannah is fucking great. He's an old school villain.
He's 1940s. Did you read his ex-wife, Venus, and his children? Read those names right there.
Magnificus. Buscia?
Buscia.
Buscia, Georgia, and Thaddeus Jr.
Yeah.
Thaddeus Jr. didn't extend to naming children.
Yeah.
Which of those two were in the multiversity issue? I think it was
Buscia
and Thaddeus Jr.
Probably.
Yeah. Either way, I'm not sure if I want the kids to be in this movie. Probably not. But I think to make up for what I think we universally thought was weird casting of Zachary Levi as the lead, this is actually really on point.
I get the feeling that he will be the best part of this movie, too.
Mm.
Well, that's if they don't put The Rock in it.
Yeah, if Black Adam's in it, I mean, that's going to be the best part.
Speaking of that, so I follow The Rock on Instagram because he's always posting dope shit, and He recently met Stan Lee, and in the description, he was just... Basically, at the end of it, you come to find out that The Rock doesn't know that Black Adam is a DC character, because he says something along the lines of, I can't wait to make the folks at Marvel happy with my Black Adam performance, or something to that extent.
Nice.
And you're just like, oh, man, you...
You had me for a second.
Yeah. Oh, damn it. Hey, damn it, Tyler, Rock.
When we went and saw Thor, do you have any... I have an inclination to see that Jumanji movie.
I actually kind of do also.
That Jumanji movie
looks like
dope.
It's going to be dumb as hell, but...
Yeah,
like...
but you got at least three people that I like. You got The Rock, Karen Gillan, and Jack Black. You got them in there.
Yeah.
And they're all playing character actors. They're not playing themselves.
Yeah. That, I mean, that's kind of why I mean, I remember seeing the first pictures of that, like, oh, this is the...
This is
you see the lineup, like, this is the fucking Jumanji movie.
Yeah.
But the way they've set it up as a video game...
And they have powers, and they have lives, like cake?
It seems like a really fun little device to just, like, set up this ridiculous, ridiculous world.
Yeah.
Which I'm down with.
And then Rhys Darby's in it, too. He's in Voltron. He's the main... He's, like, the helper of the princess in Voltron, but he's also in, like, Yes Man... As like Jim Carrey's boss at the bank,
yeah,
he does the Harry. He has the Harry Potter party. It's really funny.
Yeah, no, I'm down to see that movie.
Did you watch Series of Unfortunate Events?
No,
I did. Yeah,
you know the last two where it's the sawmill.
Yeah,
he's the main guy's helper dude. Rhys Darby is like the main guy's like butt buddy. Like,
yeah,
they get arrested together.
Right. Yeah.
At the
okay.
End. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll probably watch Jumanji, but I'll probably wait to watch it at home. Definitely does not seem like a movie I need to pay $15 for. Yeah,
so let's get to the meat of today's show, and it's this news story that I think is fucking amazing.
Yeah, it's you know,
it gives me hope for the future.
it does, but at the same time, like, because I work in one of these industries, and also...
Let's get into it.
Fair enough. Yeah. So Constellation Brands, the owner of Corona Beer, has acquired or is acquiring 9.9% stake in a company called Canopy Growth Corporation, which is, they're based in Canada, the world's biggest cannabis producer.
Rah, rah, rah.
Yeah, which, that is amazing. Canopy Growth confirmed in a press release this Monday that the two companies who will collaborate to develop and market cannabis-based beverages, which they hope will be able to be sold as adult-use products in markets where those products are federally legal.
So that's the stipulation right
there.
There's
a first red flag. Now, in Canada, it is federally legal.
Yeah.
So you can actually ship between... What are they called?
Principalities? Territories.
Territories. Provinces?
Provinces.
Provinces. So you can actually ship across borders, basically. Cannot
so, like,
do that.
You can ship between the Northwest Territories and Alberta.
Exactly. You cannot do that in the United States. Cannabis, although illegal, even if you're going from, say, Washington to Oregon, both completely legal states.
Although legal. You said although illegal.
Oh, yeah. No, although legal. You cannot ship across state borders.
That is a federal crime.
You are technically considered... smuggling drugs at that point. So anyways, back to this story. Constellation Brands will be paying $245 million to buy this less than 10% stake in Canopy Growth Corporation.
Only barely less than 10%, 9.9%.
Yeah.
True.
With the option to purchase additional shares
in the future. Yes.
Yeah.
And, which, I mean, so one half of me, because for listeners who don't know, I do work in the cannabis industry, and just like, fuck
legally.
Yes. Legally. Yes, I'm in a legal state.
I feel like that is an important distinction.
Yes, I
am. Otherwise, people would be like, is he just a drug dealer?
Manufacturer. Thank you.
Packager, even.
Yeah. Sometimes a dealer. I did do a vendor day yesterday. I was peddling my wares.
Instead of being in back alleys and like in cars and parking lots,
in a store.
It's in light underneath fluorescent lights.
Yeah.
It's in a building underneath fluorescent lights. Everybody's kind of happy it's Friday.
Everybody got a receipt.
Yeah.
So the alcohol giant, who owns 100 brands of beer, wine, and spirits, will also be able to provide Canopy Growth support in areas related to consumer analytical marketing, which is fucking great for them. It even goes on to say, this is crucial, especially in a political climate where the Canadian federal government is attempting to restrict the branding and advertisement of cannabis in line with their mantra of legalizing weed to protect Canada's youth.
Which, that does have merit. It is seen that where cannabis is legalized, youth use of cannabis has dropped significantly.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, let's just look at our youth. How hard was it to get beer in high school compared to how hard was it to buy a bag of weed in high school?
Well, I understand the difference there, but I'm saying, like...
That's what I'm saying. So, like, by legalizing it, they're actually making it harder for the youth to get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Theoretically.
I think more than theoretically, to be honest.
There is a drop in minor usage in both Washington and Colorado.
Yeah, actually.
And it's down by like 15 to 20%. It's better in Colorado than it is here.
Yes.
But it's still a correlation. It's not like a causation. Like, it's a trend, but it's not like, they don't know if that's the cause.
Fair enough.
Like, you need multiple years of sociological study
absolutely.
To do that.
But it's still too new to actually be able to cement that data.
It's been recreationally legal here for 3-4 years, but it's...
Has it been that long?
2012 was the election, and it went into
effect 2013.
Didn't actually start seeing results from it until about 2014.
Though. I think the first stores opened in, June of 2014.
Yeah. But it has. It's weird how time flies when you're stoned as fuck.
Yeah.
that's a joke, everybody.
So, and that's one thing is the Constellation brand CEO, Rob Sands, has confirmed that the company is getting into the marijuana space in anticipation for federal legalization of recreational cannabis in the U.S. in the coming years. So this is just one of, I'm sure, many companies who are doing this that have millions, if not billions of dollars to hit the ground running when it becomes federally legal. And so the reason why this kind of bothers me is because right now, at least in Washington, the cannabis industry is very craft, very artisan at the moment, you know?
You're talking like big business coming in like they are for craft brewing.
Exactly. And no, absolutely. That's exactly what I'm getting at. And so that kind of bothers. I mean, at the same time, that can also be great for companies if they do what it seems to be the case with craft brewing, to where they're just more giving them resources to expand and grow and not really stepping in. What I don't ever want to see is Marlboro selling packs of joints.
Oh, okay.
At the gas station, you know, like that
oh,
is.
You know that's gonna happen.
It'll happen soon, dude.
Oh, I know, but I want it to be as far away as possible.
Well, maybe it always is gonna be a little bit different. Like, there is a difference between like a gigantic brewery just brewing humongous batches of beer, super controlled and sort of automatic.
Like Corona.
Yeah, and then some local microbrew that kind of does everything by hand and with a lot of care.
And they both have a place in the market.
Eventually, there's going to be that difference between a cannabis company that's got a gigantic warehouse and everything on automatic grow lights and feeding cycles and everything.
Oh, yeah, it's true.
And then that dude who's got his own little tiny place.
With, he's growing employees.
He's growing, 30 plants at once, and they talk to their plants and hand-mist them and all that shit.
No, and that's true. And there will be a market for both of them. Hopefully the market is shared. Now, granted, this is great. In the whole legalization push through as many countries as they can get in, because one thing this article
didn't Portugal just legalize medical marijuana?
They did. Yep. In fact, it's the world is a changing. One thing that this article does say is by this team up, the Canopy Growth company will have access to all of the influence that the Corona has with the LCB in the United States.
Oh, see, that's probably the best part
and
of it.
And their quality control. Constellation Brands has a myriad of people that do quality control for the other things they make.
Right.
Why not add that science to Canopy Growth?
Yeah, they've
willingly said, Canopy's going to have access to that, too.
Absolutely.
Now, when we did the Science Nights episode for beer last week, we did it with Lab Tech from Georgetown Brewing. Her previous vocation was at Elysian Brewing, and she was there when AB InBev came in and bought them out.
Uh-huh.
Now, business practices aside, she said that they have the most expert quality control specialist that she's ever worked with. And she was saying that there were techniques that they were using for testing the quality of beer at Elysian now that are outstripping most other big breweries.
Right.
So there is an advantage to this that's on the production side.
No, absolutely. And I definitely think that there can be multiple advantages, especially with them hopefully being able to push the LCB into treating the cannabis industry a little bit more like the brewing industry, which it really should be treated as. My main concern is too many of the little guys being pushed out. Because to me, the cannabis industry should be, you know, local farmers, local products.
Well, right now it kind of has to be.
And I just really like that trend. I know eventually when it becomes federally legal that there will be countrywide brands. Hell, my company is in 4 different states right now. So I do understand that it's going that way. But at the same time...
Sidetracked, how do they do state taxes here in Washington? Because, you have to pay... they have to pay federal tax... And they have to pay state tax if you're a business. What's that like here in Washington? Because federally, you can't use electronic funds for an illegal business.
So there are the way we do it And the way every cannabis company does it is we cannot use banks that are in multiple states. They follow more federal regulations. And so we have to use
credit unions and stuff then.
Exactly. Yeah. And then we go and we
BECU
literally...
BECU for win!
BECU will not take our money.
Red Canoe really? Will.
I'm not surprised.
Red Canoe will.
They will. We don't use them. But
Red Canoe takes up, anybody's money. But they're a good credit union.
Yeah. So we show up to the bank with fat stack of cash.
I bet, yeah.
And then they're just, okay, here you go. And they're like, cool, thanks for all your weed money.
Yep.
And then we have a bank account where we can pay our taxes through that and actually have a digital account.
That's
that
good,
point, you know?
Because otherwise you have to do it by mail with cash.
Yeah.
Which runs the risk of
being stolen. Yeah. Oh, look, this briefcase full of money went missing in the mail.
Yeah, and then you have, like, you know, 3 months down the line, you get a fucking note from the IRS saying, we still have yet to receive your taxes for the fiscal year 2016. Yeah. And you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah, so that is the way that the industry works for paying taxes right now, because the entire, even from the producer and manufacturing side of it, it's still a cash business.
Yeah.
So when we buy 40 pounds at a time, we go, here's a shitload of cash. Thank you, grower. Like,
yeah. But there are, like, licenses and stuff that they have that'll, like you take that with you to a bank and you're allowed to make that deposit.
Exactly. And we have 10,000 or more. We actually also have to log with the LCB our deliveries with a window and the route that we're taking. So they know that if we get pulled over, if our delivery people get pulled over on that route, that cannabis is legal. Yeah. If they're off the route, even if still in the time frame, still roughly heading in the same direction, it can be seized as an illegal product.
So, like, you have to tell them, the street and the turns you're taking.
Yeah, like this is the route we will be taking.
Yeah. Wow.
And so that just goes back to me more being like, it needs to be controlled as the brewing market and not as its own separate cannabis market.
Columbia Distribution does have to log their routes with the Liquor Control Board here.
Okay, fair enough. But they're all, I don't know, like, there are a lot of things that the brewers are allowed to do that we're not. Like, the brewers can have a tasting room inside of in their own facility. We absolutely cannot do that. Brewers are allowed to give reject product and sample product to not only their own employees, but to other industry, or not other industries, but other businesses. We're allowed to give out 2 grams of samples per lot per month to other companies. So we get a new strain, we can give out 2 grams a month.
Okay, so let's get back to the story a little bit. While both Canopy Growth and Constellation confirm they'll be working together, they will only be making cannabis-based beverages. Linton confirmed that they will not be working together to make alcoholic beverages. They quote, "Why would I want to do that? The consumers are seeking something healthy, something not driven by sugars, not driven by alcohol."
Well, and, you know, I kind of do like that that's kind of what they're doing. It's Corona's, you know, parent company breaking into, it's another drink that they're making.
Yeah.
It's another just intoxicating drink.
Another intoxicating drink. But so we were kind of talking about, well, you know, big businesses breaking into cannabis and making it all institutionalized and shit. But Corona probably knows how to mass produce good beverages.
Yeah.
You can figure out a good way to make like a cannabis beverage.
Cannabis apple juice. There you go.
Yeah.
There are a lot out there. Some of them are really fucking great. Some of them are fucking terrible that you can get right now. Talking to you, Legal Drinks. It's a brand name. They're gross. Don't buy them. But there are some that are actually really fucking good drinks. Like the other day I had a cola one that straight tasted like, not like a Coke, like a knockoff cola, but still definitely drinkable.
Did I ever tell you about the first time I had a weed drink?
I had a couple a while ago.
It was actually, anybody who listened to this podcast for a long time, it was actually right before episode 69. When I got my wisdom tooth taken out, like that episode I couldn't drink.
Because he was using pain medication for his tooth. I've had my wisdom tooth removed. You need that shit.
Well, no, I wasn't using pain meds.
Oh, shit. Okay, yeah.
It was just because there was a socket, they weren't letting me drink alcohol. I couldn't smoke anything, like I pulled the socket out.
Except for this pull.
But my girlfriend at the time's brother got me a bunch of edibles and also a drink. That he gave me the drink, and it was just like this kind of cola-y thing. He's like, here, you might like this. I started drinking it, and then he gave me the edibles. Mm-hmm. And he didn't tell me explicitly that it was a cannabis
drink.
So I downed like half the bottle, and then he's like, oh, here's your edibles. And then I thought to look at the actual label, and down in the corner, he's like, this is this much percent THC. And I was like, fuck.
Yeah, and that was a good episode.
My point was, some of those drinks are fucking good. That one treated me real well.
I don't remember what it's called, but I've had a raspberry lemonade, like, triple-infused one, and I brought it here.
I think I sampled that one. Yeah,
and it's really good. It's a little sugary, but it's really good.
It was like a thick juice, but still really good. Like, kind of syrupy, but tasty. And granted, don't get me wrong, I hope this goes the way that it most likely will. They're making a good quality cannabis beverage that many people will enjoy. Hopefully it turns new people on to using recreational cannabis. What I don't want to see is AB InBev getting into the cannabis industry.
They will.
So that's the thing. I don't want to see Marlboro doing it. I don't want to see...
If it's not them, then it's going to be Coke.
Yeah.
Or Pepsi.
You know,
one of those two.
I used to think that I would want to smoke joints like people smoke cigarettes. Go buy a pack of joints.
God, no.
Well, I mean, I didn't mean, like, literally as much, but, like, have a package. Buy a pack of joints, just have a pack of joints.
Oh, yeah, that's nice.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't smoke that much weed nowadays, but I would still actually, as much as you don't want to see Marlboro in the cannabis industry, I would love to be able to go just buy a pack of joints.
You could do that right now and not support that company.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, but that also costs you, like, $60, but, you know.
like a $20 pack of little fucking tiny joints.
When we went to the Eclipse, I went and got a $25 pack of pre-rolls.
Did it come in a little cigarette pack?
That particular brand did not, but there are brands that do make them that are exactly like that.
Really?
I have some packaging at home that I'll show you.
Yeah, let me see that.
You want
Marlboro 420s is what you want.
I do not.
That was good.
Last thing I want to mention is that cannabis-infused edibles are still illegal, federally illegal in Canada. Cannabis-infused edibles includes coffee, soda, and other kinds of drinks, and they will not be legal in Canada until July 2018. But the government is expected to legalize edibles again. Okay, so they're going to be illegal in July 2018, but the government is expected to reverse that in mid-2019. Big Weed has been lobbying in the Canadian government to legalize edibles.
Word right there already bothers me.
Big Weed.
As soon as possible, arguing that its illegality will almost fuel the sustenance of the black market, negating the government's whole raison d'etre of legalization to begin with.
See, and I mean, I get why all these governments are afraid of it, because it is new ground that they're treading.
Shares in Canopy growth surged almost 14% in early trading after this announcement. That's fucking funny and good. I think it's good. I rail against, like, craft brewing having, like, being bought out and stuff, but I have no problem with this. For some reason, because it's still taboo a little bit.
I think the reason that you have a problem with, like, big beers, I mean, after the Prohibition and everything, you know, Prohibition ended, and when we started getting bigger and bigger companies... Mm-hmm. And, you know, it kind of got watered down. We're now sort of in a weed prohibition phase. We're having some big entity that makes a lot of money and has a vested interest in pushing legality is going to end up creating a space for federal
legalism, which is good.
Yeah, well, it's going to make that push, and then that's going to make a space for people who aren't so much about the mass production and just, you know, want to make a good product. The more craft, weird way to say this, but craft weed industry.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm kind of with you on this, and that having a big company behind it is, I think, in the long term, a good thing right now.
Right.
And I think I agree with you on that. I guess it really just comes down to...
We're arguing between market forces versus, like, moral ethic forces.
True. No, that's 100% right?
and
what we're
I think
arguing.
We're all on the same page when it comes to, like, just fucking legalize it. Come on. This is a moot point right now. There are bigger problems.
Although we do live in Washington, so...
I know, but...
West Coast.
It's legal just as much on the East Coast in places, man.
No. The East Coast seaboard is a lot stricter.
That Midwest area, a bunch of weirdos there.
Missouri's got medical marijuana now.
Fucking Texas. Texas is going to take for goddamn ever.
And just the middle of the country, there's a lot of people that have a problem with weed, because that's the devil's tobacco.
Yeah, it's the...
We gotta get rid of that.
Their liquor laws are very much based in, like, Baptist principles, too, especially in Texas, like dry Sundays and stuff
like that.
So, I mean, you're right.
I would shoot myself if I lived in a place that had a dry Sunday.
Sometimes there's bars that'll close, like, early on Saturdays, too.
That's
depending on the local government. They can absolutely change that. Austin's better. Austin has, like, no rules. They even stay open to, like, 4 in the morning.
Well, Austin's also a college city.
Yeah, but it's also the capital of Texas.
Austin is like, you took a city from outside of Texas and plopped it into Texas.
Well, I mean, Houston's pretty liberal, too. because NASA's the center of Houston, or part of it anyway.
Yeah.
Johnson Space Center is huge and employs a lot of people.
That's true.
Like, yeah, Boeing, but you can
be a
here.
Dumb hick and still be good at math.
I don't know if that's true.
Yeah, neither do I.
I don't think that's the thing.
Actually, you might be right there.
Let's get into the reviews after this. This is actually, I like this cover. That's a good one.
Yeah,
good
story. I guess at the end of the day, like you were saying, is it really depends on the big company that's getting into the industry. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's a good company that's going to do it properly, I've got no problem.
You know, Amazon should really start pushing for this. They could up their deliveries by like tenfold.
Holy shit. If Amazon got into the weed delivery business.
You can't.
You can't yet.
You can't yet. But I'm just saying, if it was possible, because Amazon does drone deliveries and shit. You might have dope. That would be like
Uber bags.
Uber, dude, not even Uber bags. You just want a bag, and a drone comes over and drops you a bag of weed.
But Uber bags, like Uber Eats, you can pick the restaurant or you can pick the dispensary that it comes from. You know, that dispensary has got that.
No,
brand,
that'd be
blah,
rad.
Blah, blah,
that'd
you know,
be but rad. But I'm just saying.
In comics, Bruce
Amazon
fifth year, they
has drone
subjects.
Deliveries. You know how we're gonna be living in the goddamn future when you can get on the Amazon app. Order yourself a bag of weed and a fucking drone.
Robot flies it to you.
And then a second drone comes in with a pizza and you're all good to go.
Now you're going to get beer on that same kick consistently.
Which you can.
You can. Which, oh, you know what I really love? Chris told me this a couple weeks ago that he can order Montucky from Amazon.
Yeah, he told me this too.
Yeah, and get it sent to a locker, and or maybe get it delivered straight to his work.
To his work, yeah.
Yeah, within like 2 hours. Mm-hmm. See, that's kind of the level that if Amazon got into weed delivery and it was legal, that's what we would be on.
Oh yeah, I don't doubt it, dude. There are already services that do it. They just do it kind of on the DL.
There are other states that do have.
Yeah, they're
weed
called drug dealers.
Yeah, no, I know, but like they're actually under the table employed by some weed shops. It's
not
rare.
Washington. There are some places that do have delivery services, but it is not the most legal thing that you should be doing by any stretch.
Let's get into reviews. We're going long. Who wants to go first?
I do, because my book was shit.
Dead Man? I thought it was supposed to be really good.
No, it was not. It was not. So I read Dead Man number one.
Did you just not get anything that was in the
DC Comics? Hold on, let me pull up the creative team for you.
I'm going to mute you if you mouth breathe anymore.
Well, I can't nose breathe right now, so fuck you.
Mouth.
I really hope fucking Tyler catches this.
Oh, I'm going to have to.
All right. Oh, wow. Speaking of Neil Adams.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
The artist on this was Neil Adams. The writer was also Neil Adams. Dude, I'm pumped you're getting a fucking an award. This book was garbage.
His last Superman book was pretty shit, too.
Like, the art was definitely the best part of this.
That's
kind of
the thing about big creators in any industry. When they start to get old, they get a little weird.
Yeah, Batman, the Dark Knight 3, the Master Race.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a little out there, man.
So, Dead Man number one. That's what I'm reading. This book starts out with Ambassador Jim Gordon in China inspecting nuclear weapons for
what the fuck?
No goddamn reason. Also, Commissioner Gordon speaks in broken English. I don't know if that was a racist slight towards the Chinese or not, but it's pretty fucking bad and very, very blatant. And throughout this, like, it keeps jumping around super sporadically between like Dead Man's past and why he actually died. And then the fact that, like, Dead Man's twin brother took over his place as a trapeze artist, so that the assassin didn't think that he actually killed Boston Brand. And...
Oh, yeah, this is totally done by Neil Adams.
Oh, it's just a huge, convoluted mess. And by the end of it, come to find out that the Jim Gordon that's there isn't Jim Gordon, it's actually Batman! And so he rips off... There's a scene where he rips off... his facial prosthetics, and then puts a shitty Batman plastic mask on his face to cover his identity. And then it comes back to Bruce Wayne and Alfred talking to Dead Man in Wayne Manor, and Wayne, and he's just like, oh, well, I killed that dude. And Dead Man's like, you don't kill people. He's like, well, but I did. I totally killed that dude that killed you way back in the day. And he's like, here, you should go to this address in China. End of book.
Yeah, I'm looking at it, and it seems convoluted.
It's very, very convoluted. Like, I went into this, and I'm like, oh, this is a new number one, and I hear it's actually supposed to be decent. And then I'm like, Are we sure this isn't a number four? Because this feels like there is a shitload of plot that I am missing out on. And, but there's not.
There's not.
There's nothing. There's nothing there. So, like, it goes in, and you get the feeling like you're supposed to know that the dude called The Hook, I think The Hook.
Yeah, it's Hook.
Killed Boston Brand, and that he worked for the League of Shadows before it was Roz's League of Shadows.
Yeah.
And it was fucking ran by this crazy kung fu master.
Is it I Ching? Is that who the master is?
I don't think they ever say it. They always call him Master.
Because, Tyler, do you remember in the 1970s, you probably don't remember because I wasn't there either, but in the 1970s, they depowered Wonder Woman and made her, like, a kung fu detective?
Well, was that when she was wearing the, Maud outfit? Mm-hmm. It was, like, spy kind of based?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I know of that era. Because I've never read any of it.
Neil Adams and Danny O'Neill made an I Ching character, and this guy looks like I Ching. Like, her master.
No, I know of I Ching, yeah.
Her mentor.
I Ching, I thought it was.
Whatever.
Yeah.
So it could be that. Either way, this book was a tough read. And I do not recommend it if you like good comics.
Okay. Okay, it's rare that, like, one of the things I encourage us to do is to do reviews of comics we like. Adam's braver than most of us because he goes out and, like, does new number ones more often than I do.
I do search out number ones on purpose, yeah.
But, I mean, you know, it's okay to find one. Like, not all comics are good. There's no way that's possible. No, absolutely not.
I mean, especially with as many number ones as I
read. Oh, man, that is a really shitty Batman mask,
buddy.
Dude,
right? Right?
It's like Tyler's Batman mask.
Exactly. It looks like he's the evening.
Yeah. Okay.
We'll not be picking up number two.
You want to talk about all three of these are fucking Batman stories?
No, mine's a Dead Man story.
But you said Bruce Wayne is in it.
Yeah, so is Batman. But how many books in DC is Batman not in?
Not much.
Not many.
Yeah.
But, I'm going to talk about something that we like.
Yeah.
Actually, I haven't read this yet, and I really need to.
Did you read the first one?
I did not.
Oh, shit. I got it at home. I'll give it to you.
Yeah.
So, Batman, White Knight, number two. Two of eight.
Fucking, what's his name? What's the guy's
By creator? Sean Murphy?
This guy.
Dude.
This dude.
Okay, so when we heard about this series, I thought it was more of an Elseworlds thing. Like, yeah. This is the way the world has always been. But it's turned into, like, you just kind of pick a point in Batman's history, and the Joker was cured, and now we're going from there with the story.
Yeah.
So this is the story after Joker has decided to kind of take
become
on...
Become the White Knight.
Yeah, he's decided to save Gotham from Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, he's out of prison. He's out, and he's totally clear, and he's exposed a lot of things. Like
show Adam the first page where he's on trial.
Yeah, you can pop that open.
See the shadow?
That shadow is rad.
Yeah.
Yeah. The whole kind of thing is that the caveat is kind of, I like the way they take this, where in the whole time that the Joker is keep getting imprisoned, he keeps coming back to prison because, they spin the story that he's this crazy murderer and he does all this shit. But it turns out that GCPD doesn't have a lot of evidence against him.
Because they don't really know who he is.
No, it's not even that they don't know who he is. It's that they actually don't have evidence that he committed a lot of these crimes.
Oh, okay.
So, like, that's why he's never been convicted of murder.
Yeah, he's always just been like, you're criminally insane.
Exactly. He's criminally insane. And they catch him on, like, bank robbing or, like, holding somebody up or something.
Sure, he's like mugging.
Yeah.
Like, he's never been accused of, like, releasing that one gas in Gotham that killed, like, hundreds
of
people.
Yeah, like, that's kind of where they take this story, where this isn't a Joker who has, like, poisoned the well. This is a Joker who just goes on wacky clown crimes kind of thing. So this issue is a lot about... So the first issue was all about him getting cured and kind of deciding he's going to take on Batman. This is him being free and kind of coming back into his life outside of prison, and it's with him meeting back up with Harley.
Yeah.
And it is probably my favorite weird meta commentary on Harley Quinn that I have ever read in my entire life.
Yeah, other side from the, like, the original creators being like, this isn't who she is.
Yeah, like, I don't really want to spoil it entirely, besides saying that when he goes home and there's Harley there, and it's Harley
as you know her now.
Well, yeah, as you know her now, like, with the outfit from Suicide Squad,
mm-hmm.
and she's acting, like, he opens the door, and she goes, oh my god, daddy's home, blah! And the thing is, he kind of, like, now that he's cured, he doesn't really have a solid memory of time as the Joker.
Yeah.
He knows what he's done, but it's, you know, it's kind of like the Joker was a personality that came out, and he's pulling away from it. So he knows that he didn't treat Harley well, And but he also knows that he loves her.
Yeah, like incredibly.
Oh, yeah,
man, this image of Freeze and Nora.
Yeah,
go ahead, go ahead. Keep going.
So he goes and he proposes to her, and she takes it like it's a joke. Like, what are you fucking doing?
Yeah, like, let's go rob somebody.
Yeah, and then he keeps pressing her, like, no, look, really.
I love you. I'm sorry. Please.
And she calls
and he's
her.
Like, my meds. My meds are everywhere.
He calls her Puddin', and she slaps his hand down and says, I'm not your Puddin'. And then somebody kicks her from off screen and says, no, you never were. I was. And it's
classic.
Harley in the Harley outfit, the original, like, Harlequin jester outfit.
Yeah. Outfit.
And it turns out in this world, which I just love this explanation, at a certain point, the original Harley realized that the person she fell in love with had descended and was gone.
Yeah.
And they cut that off with what happened was what happened to Jason Todd. This is the one time where, like, she's
like, no, we're done. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, like, that is when she realized that he was too far gone.
Yeah.
And so she left after that point, and Joker never noticed. Somebody else came and filled in.
Mm-hmm. Someone else went crazy. She's like, you love Joker, I love Jack.
Exactly.
And I'm like, that's pretty fucking deep. Like,
yeah.
I am entirely impressed with Gordon Murphy on this
one,
man.
Yeah, the way that Sean Murphy plays this out is incredible, but a lot of this book is about the Joker and Harley's relationship, and it is real fantastic. Mm-hmm. I mean, beyond just the way that they talk, like, they really actually, he treats Harley like she should be. She is a psychologist. She's actually incredibly intelligent. And I just love the way that he makes this little commentary on the way she's portrayed in the comics now is so far from her original way she is.
She's a sex symbol now and an idol for little girls. That's,
yeah,
you know.
And the real one that shows up, like, comes across as, like, smart, caring, and, like, actually concerned for him. Like, she grabs like, she's telling the story. She grabs Batman when she realizes that the Joker has Jason Todd.
Yeah.
She goes to that, and that is the breaking point. But now that he's back, she is back with him. She's still there, ready to help him out, even though he isn't necessarily doing crime. Well, he might be. Well, this is, I'm not going to say,
it's ambiguous. We don't know what he's going to do to fix
Gotham.
Yeah,
I'm not
going
to tell you what happens other than to say that he is definitely on the path to save Gotham from Batman as he sees it, like Gotham and the way GCPD run things, but he's also still mixed in with his old crowd.
Yeah.
But the way they do it is fantastic. So
there's Joker's the A story in this. The B story is Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, Bruce Wayne is still a part of this.
And he's his stuff going on with Victor Freeze right now is fucking intense.
Oh, I love part of this in that Joker has a point that the rich make money off of crime.
Yeah.
And there is a part where it seems to be the first time Bruce has ever encountered this. He has a party and some little asshole talks about how crime is actually a great source of money. When Batman... Okay, I'm just going to read the quote. Batman usually fights crime in poor neighborhoods, which the city then labels Bat Impact Zones, which drops the price of real estate even more. Those zones receive grants in order to rebuild. The trick is to buy right after a zone is declared, then flip it after the taxpayers foot the repair bill. And this is exactly what the Joker is trying to fight against.
Yeah.
And it's something
perpetual
that...
perpetual fucking...
Yeah, I think it's something that's not hit in main Batman comics enough, is that... I mean, there is always kind of the thing where the rich... There is a gigantic rich-poor divide in Gotham.
Oh, my God, is there not? Yeah, it's hit on every Batman movie hits on it.
Yeah.
At least the Chris Nolan
like,
ones.
It's kind of like, you know, it's there, but it's never a focus. But in here, it is the focus of the Joker's crusade.
Show Adam that last page of the comic, or did you see it?
I saw it.
Yeah, where they're all standing in front of the Rogues Gallery. Holy shit, dude.
Yeah, it's... So this book has continued to just blow my mind as an amazing... kind of side story.
So now, having read this, now you're two issues in and you have full faith in Sean Murphy. Remember his tweet a little while ago that after the next work with Scott Snyder, he's not going to work with a writer anymore?
Yeah.
And you're like, what? And then now you read this, you're like, okay.
Yeah,
that's fine.
I'm down.
Sure, yeah.
If Sean Murphy continues to just put out his own stuff that is this good,
I am 100% down.
Yeah, this is amazing. This
is probably the best Batman story I have read in years.
In a while.
And it's hardly a Batman story.
Yeah, it's more of a Joker story, right? Does it remind you all of the Lee Bermejo Joker story at all?
See,
just in the frame.
It focuses on the Joker, but that one was more of a classic Joker.
This is the Joker a little bit.
Although the funny thing about that is they had the design for that book
before.
Yeah, like before the images of the Dark Knight Joker come out.
Yeah.
I'm sure they kind of tweaked, like they designed it, Dark Knight came out, and then Joker came out. But I'm sure they were floating around the
DC office, like, this is what Heath Ledger's gonna look like.
They claimed they had the idea for the scars, too, which that was more of a classic Joker story where he is just like this total crazed maniac. This is taking the Joker's point of view and just like making it the focus. But twisting it a little bit.
Sure.
Like, basically what I'm getting at is taking the relationship between the Joker and Batman and making Batman the bad guy in that story.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it kind of sounds like, oh, this is a super edgy way to do it, but then you frame it in that the Joker's cured and he sees Gotham as a crime-riddled hellhole that Batman is perpetuating.
Yeah. And that's funny considering, like, the main premise of the Joker in the first issue, which is, like, you need me.
Yeah.
We perpetuate this together.
Yeah, and then he is cured and sees that cycle and wants to destroy it.
Oh, wait a minute.
So this book is fucking great. Y'all should read it.
It's a good commentary on the dynamic between Batman and the Joker.
And I'm on board for the rest of it, 100%.
So my review is going to be Batman the Devastator number 1, which is written by Frank Thierry and James Tynion. The art is by Tony Daniel, and the colors are by Tamu Mori. But I also want to kind of pepper this in with Justice League number 32. Last week, Tyler and I were saying, like, I really like Dark Knight's Metal because there's not a lot of tie-ins.
And then this week, there's the Justice League tie-in.
Last week's Flash was a tie-in, and this week's Justice League is a tie-in. Next week is Green Lantern, and then
I think our point still stands in that we're not getting, like, a 6-issue Justice League tie-in to Dark Knight's Metal.
Yeah, which also crosses over with Justice Society, so you have to, like, 1-2, 1-2, 1-2.
We're still not doing that. But I think it is, you're right, it is funny that we're saying, Justice League doesn't tie in, and then the next issue comes out, and it is the tie-in. But anyways.
Absolutely. So the Batman the Devastator part of the story is definitely, like, one of the Dark Knights. He has another origin story. Here's what happens in it. Superman is still attached to the Dark Multiverse Tower. Batman the Devastator steals the top of the Anti-Monitor's Tower, brings it back to Gotham, and then that part of the Dark Multiverse is teleported in. That's what happens in, like, the now section of the book. The rest of the book is explaining Batman the Devastator's world, but, like, also, like the other books, where the Batman Who Laughs comes in and stuff like that. The best part, I think, is the days leading up to the now part of the book, and it's Batman the Devastator coming up to Lois and showing the infection. So every main city that the Batman, the Dark Knights have hit has become like a version of them. So, like, the Speed Force city from Red Death has a death storm going on.
Yeah,
exactly. Green Lantern's Coast City is in darkness. The Drowned has changed the water literally around Atlantis.
Yeah.
And Murder Machine has basically just destroyed Detroit.
Well, the thing that I really, really loved about this story
is that everything's doomsdayed.
Well, everything's doomsdayed. But the whole premise is, Batman, these are worlds created off of Batman's fears. Like,
yeah.
He thinks, like, okay, what if this happened? How would I solve it? And it's like a nightmare version of that.
Yeah, so this one is, what if Superman is unreconcilable and becomes a despot?
The thing that I fucking love is we get no explanation, and even the narration is just, nobody knows why, but Superman suddenly went bad.
Yep.
And in this, you know, that's not a real great premise for a comic book. Like, oh, why would, like, well, suddenly Superman went evil, and you're like, why? Why? But the whole thing about this is based off his nightmares.
And it doesn't matter, right?
It does not matter why. All we see is this world where Superman went evil as fuck.
Yeah, and Batman's his only recourse. He first tried to fight a man-to-man. Superman kicks his ass.
Rips his arm off.
Uses his laser vision to cut his arm off.
Yeah.
And then Batman's like, well, this is my only option. So he turns himself into Doomsday.
Yeah.
He uses a he re-engineers the Doomsday virus so he can keep his sanity, and he just picks Superman apart. Eventually, he coughs kryptonite clouds into his face.
Well, I think he coughs the Doomsday virus into him.
Is that what happens? Well, because the next thing he does is he impales Superman on those
spikes.
No,
he doesn't impale him. It grows out of him.
Is that what happens?
Yeah.
Either way, it's a very fucking graphic scene.
It's graphic as fuck, but
like,
yeah.
You remember, like, the scenes from The Death of Superman? They're very, like, instead of it being, like, what happens, they're very much like, here's his tattered cape on a pole, and, like, it's all implied.
I don't think it grows out of him, because if you look at the ground, those Doomsday spikes have grown everywhere, and he's laying on the ground.
I think Batman puts him into the ground, dude.
Yeah.
No, but
he's laying on the ground, and then it comes out of his chest.
Exactly. So the ground.
But then when you turn the page.
So the ground explodes into him.
The ground has exploded into
him. I guess that makes sense.
Because yeah, if you see, like, you only get like three panels to try and figure that out.
But still, Superman is pierced. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times.
I like the nightmare version where, like, Batman has this last ditch weapon, and it infects the whole world. It's like, in order to beat Superman, he has to make the world immune to Superman. He doesn't make himself. Like, that is the nightmare version of how to beat Superman. You don't make yourself able to beat him. You make the world immune to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it goes so haywire.
Yeah, it does. The comic ends with Lois protecting Superboy and, like, sealing him away in the Kent's apartment. And the Kent's apartment was just like Sue Dibney's apartment in the... Come on. Help me out here. Identity Crisis? Do you remember how she, like, all the protection that apartment has? It's like, it's got like Thanagarian.
It's got everything. You pick a hero
and
that has any kind of technology or magic, whatever, that's in the Kent apartment.
Yeah. So that's what's here, right? And Jonathan gets sealed in, and Lois starts to turn into a Doomsday infected victim. And so does everybody else in Metropolis. And it fits that whole Batman, the Dark Knights have infected every other city. And it's really fucking terrible, and I really hope something else happens. Next week is The Batman Who Laughs, and that's going to be one of the best ones.
Oh, that, at least it fucking better be.
It better be, right? So,
he's shown up in all of them.
I want to tie in real quick with the Justice League here. In the main bigger story, because these are all like little flashback vignettes to what's happening with the Dark Knights. In the bigger story, after Dark Knight's metal, everybody got separated, you remember? Like, the Batman Who Laughs put everybody with their doppelganger.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, the Flash went to Central City and the Red Death went with them, and then the Drowned went to Atlantis and Aquaman went with them. And it's all this whole comic, Justice League number 32, is told from Cyborg's perspective. And it's essentially, like, how are these guys being thwarted? How is the Justice League being thwarted at every turn? It's because the Batman Who Laughs has Cyborg. And he's able to, like, Cyborg has just collected data on the Justice League since he's been a part of the series, since he's been a part of the team. So Batman Who Laughs is using Cyborg's, like, memories and data on these guys, and he's making it so the Dark Knights are able to just pick apart them one piece at a time. And that's what this four-parter is. It's just a continual struggle, but it's all framed in. So Cyborg started out as a football player as a kid, so he goes through each member of the league, and he's like, well, this guy Barry Allen, he's the fastest man alive, he can outrun anything. If your runner's good, you got a chance. So you see how the Red Death kind of takes out Barry. And then you go into, like, well, then you've got to find, like, the angriest dude. And we've got the angriest guy ever. We've got Aquaman. Like, this guy's got anger buried deep. So, like, you see how the Drowned just totally, like, nullifies Aquaman. And he's like, well, shit. Well, we've definitely got the best fighter in the world. The best fighter in the world can definitely handle any opportunity or any challenge that comes at her. And that's Wonder Woman. So then her and the Merciless fight. And the Merciless has a fucking great line in here. He, like, you know how the Batman in this universe has, like, a gold coin, a penny.
Yeah.
On my world, I ordered the ferryman at the River Styx to collect the coins from every dead Amazon that I killed, seeking passage into the afterlife. I melted those coins down and made a giant golden drachma with my face on it. And he has this giant hammer, and he rings this fucking gong that's the drachma, and he's like, warrior sisterhood, welcome your princess. All of these wraiths just come out of the coin, and it's all these dead Amazons coming at Wonder Woman.
Jesus Christ.
So it's just like, well, Wonder Woman's fucked. And so Cyborg's like, who do I turn to? And then it's Hal.
Yeah, it's like,
Green
well,
Lantern.
With enough willpower, you can conquer anything.
And so Hal tries to say his oath, and then the Dawnbringers, like, the Dawnbreakers just like, don't bother. Your oath is fucking worthless here.
It's pointless.
It's just this sea of, like, depression that just stopping every one of these leaguers. And Cyborg, the comic ends, and it's like, fuck, what do I do? And it just ends.
Ugh. Yeah, I need to revisit all the times.
Well, I mean, it is part one of...
It's part two.
Or part two of four?
Of four, yeah. So this was written by Robert Venditti, artist is Liam Sharp, and the colorist was Adam Brown. I know, I spent a long time going through that, but it was worth it. The Dark Knight story is definitely worth it.
Yeah, I need to read this shit. This shit sounds so good.
You've been saying that since everything started.
I know, dude.
I still haven't read any of it.
I want to. I love the band.
All right, why don't you guys get into your Mad Libs?
All right, I'm going first.
Hey, speaking of Mad Libs, these are all going to be based around Thor Ragnarok.
Oh, yeah, we had this idea. Hey, there's after-credit scenes in Thor. We're going to spoil them with Mad Libs.
Yeah, and then not only are there after-credit scenes in Thor movies, but in this podcast, maybe if you know your Marvel well enough.
There's an after-credit scene in this podcast.
Absolutely. Maybe you'll stick around and find out what it is. But let's get into some Mad Libs. You guys want to go first?
I'm going first. All okay. right. So I need an adjective.
Tyler, you go ahead.
Withered.
Withered. Right.
Okay. Josh, I need a drink.
A drink?
Yes.
Your mom's pussy juice.
Oh, gross. Gross.
Mama.
I was about to whisper pussy. Fart juice.
All right. Tyler, I need something edible.
Your mom's pussy juice.
No. Banh mi.
Ooh, banh mi sounds bomb, too.
Banh mi sounds bomb of me.
Fuck, god damn it. Josh, I need another liquid.
Bomb Tyler.
That's not going to work.
Okay, I think we're going to go with mercury.
Gross.
Okay, that'll work. All right. Speaking of something gross, Tyler, I need something gross.
How about sewage?
That's a good gross
that
thing.
That is a good gross. Josh, I need a descriptive word.
Isn't that an adjective?
It is.
Precise?
Okay.
A little meta, but I liked it.
Yeah, I need a number.
69. The sex number.
Sweet. Josh, I need a noun. Specifically a thing.
Oh, okay.
A person, place, or thing.
No, I need a specific thing. Can't be a place. Or a person.
Phone.
Okay. A little weird for Thor to have a phone. All right. Tyler, I need a noun.
Wait a minute. Doesn't he take a... Remember the movie?
Yeah, I'm trying to think about that. Yeah, there is a joke about that in the movie. You need a noun. Yeah. Bottle.
It'd be a plural noun. Are you still okay with bottles?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I need a number, Josh.
Nat 20.
69.
20. Okay. I need a noun, Tyler.
You're like, my genius is only so much.
Another noun.
Genius.
How about...
You say microphone.
Paper. No, fuck that. Pumpkin.
Too late. He wrote paper.
I like pumpkin better. I need an adjective, Josh.
Christ alive.
No,
you guys feel most of the time.
Yeah. Impatient.
I need an adjective.
Exasperated.
Enough. That is an adjective, right?
I think so. All right. It's a descriptive word. It's a modifier.
Exhausting, if enough doesn't work.
No, exhausting's way better. Thank
okay.
Now, yeah, Tyler, this is nowhere near some of yours either, so you can fucking deal with it. Josh, I need a piece of clothing.
Loincloth.
Nice, I like it.
Tyler, I need a bodily opening.
Bodily opening.
Urethra.
I want you to put down craw.
You're really stuck in my craw? Are you fucking kidding?
Last one, Josh. I need a level of intoxication.
Blacked out. All right, what do we got?
All right, so credits end. Screen is black. Fade in. Thor standing in front of a camera wearing an apron that says, "Kiss the God." He begins to speak. "Welcome back to Thor's Withered Brewing. Today we're going to be brewing my favorite alcoholic drink, Mama's Pussy Juice. First we start with Banh Mi.
Pussy Juice?
First we start with Banh Mi and get it boiling in a big pot of mercury. We drain off the excess sewage and we are left with a precise mulch. Now steep the remains in 69% grain alcohol. Store these contents in a phone and bury the container in a pile of bottles. Wait 20 days and then dig it out with a pumpkin in an impatient way. This is crucial because the gods will judge the style of your exhausting digging and meddle with your drink in a way they see fit." I didn't finish that sentence. Whoopsies. Now, the only way to drink this is to take off your loincloth, put a funnel in your craw, and pour the entire contents of our cask. Now get ready to get blacked out.
Very nice.
Very nice. I'm going to go next because mine's terrible.
Okay.
Just like you.
I left it very short in the style of after credit scenes. Josh, give me an adverb.
Heavenly.
Heavenly. That's a good one. Adam, I'd like a noun.
Tyler's butthole.
Okay, we're going to go with just butthole.
All right.
Josh,
but we all know what it is.
I guess it'd be the proper noun to be Tyler's butthole.
Nah, Josh, can I get a verb?
Vamp.
Vamp. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Adam, I need a body part.
Fleshy fun bridge.
Fleshy fun bridge. All right.
It's also known as the perineum.
Or the taint.
Or the gooch.
The chode.
Yes.
Josh, could you give me another verb?
Embellish.
Hey, that works. Adam, I need a color.
Blurple.
That's not a color.
It's blue and purple.
Okay, fine. Blurple. I'm going to put blurple. Josh, can you give me a movement verb? You're getting all the verbs this time.
I guess I'm down with that.
Coming.
Chucked.
Chucked. Okay. That's actually a really good one. Adam, I need an adverb.
Adverb.
That's a word that modifies a verb.
Squishy. Usually L-Y's. Squishy is an adjective.
Yeah.
Squishily.
Squishily isn't.
You know what? That no, I can.
That'll work.
It's not a real word, but it will work in this sense. Now, Josh, can you give me a word that is a direction? Just give me a direction.
An imperative.
Is that?
You mean
like northwest, east, south, left, right? Any kind of like direction based word?
Slantways.
Slantways. Okay, actually, that's a great one.
Thank you, Willy Wonka.
I love that. Adam, I need a kind of vehicle.
Unicycle.
Fantastic car. Dude, spider buggy. Come on.
Unicycle's Wait, pretty good.
Okay. Or rape fan. Your choice.
We're going to go with unicycle on this one. and Josh, finally, can you give me any kind of weapon that has ever existed?
Any kind? Ever?
Just give me a weapon. So you pick anything. It could be non-existent. It could be from the future. It could be from the past. Anything.
Adam's butthole.
That's... Dude, no, we're not going to go with Garrett's I'm going to veto that Garrett's one. Butthole. We already used butthole.
Oh, okay. Adam's dick.
God. All right.
It is a weapon of mass destruction.
So.
Because I slay that puss.
Jesus Christ. All right, so
we'll be here all week.
I don't know if you guys saw Thor, but this is the real post-credits really quick stinger that they put out.
Mm-hmm. Do I need to step out or is this going to spoil too much?
It won't spoil anything.
It's not literally. It's a joke.
Oh.
But, yeah, this is after the credits.
I never know with you.
It's true. Yeah. You are kind of an asshole.
So, the after credits Thor scene. Beta Ray Bill floats heavenly in space. A stray butthole floats toward him and vamps off his fleshy fun bridge. Lights embellish in the distance against the blurple of space. His eyes open. Stormbreaker chucks to his hand. Squishily spinning around, Bill launches himself slantways. We see a great mass of unicycles ahead of him, all training their dicks in his direction as he launches towards them.
That's it? That's it?
That's it. A quick little boom.
Little button scene, yeah. Like the end of with the Collector and Howard the Duck.
Exactly. I haven't fucking seen it yet.
No, with
I thought you had
the Collector and Howard the Duck, Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, nice cover.
No, I mean that is literally the end of Guardians of the Galaxy.
I know that. That's the end of Guardians of the Galaxy.
So it's not a quick cover. That's
none of that is in Thor Ragnarok. Okay.
All right.
Okay.
I want you to know this.
It's a different legendary character.
Spoilers: the Collector isn't in Thor.
Yeah, not at all.
So Josh, what do you got?
You
for
ready
us?
For this?
Yeah.
All right. So I, Tyler, I need a water bird, preferably plural.
Turns.
Cool. Adam, an American politician, anyone in American politics, it doesn't have to be everyone we're thinking of right now.
John Quincy Adams. I mean, does Putin count with how much
they have to be alive? They have to be alive and they have to be American.
But he's fucked with a lot of American politics.
You're right, but he's Russian.
Fair enough.
And I doubt he specifically did anything.
That's true. Ron Paul.
All right. I'll work with it. He's alive, but I don't think he's active.
Oh, all right, fine. How about... who's the dude that everybody wanted to be Hillary beat out? I've already forgotten his
Bernie
name.
Sanders.
Bernie Sanders.
It's Bernie Sanders, okay. Tyler, I need a European city.
There's
a lot there.
Seattle.
It's Seattle.
Seattle.
Not bad. Shit. I'm trying to think of a really good one, but I really can't.
If you say Constantinople, I'm gonna be like,
no, Istanbul. I'm not. No. Bern.
Spell it.
B-E-R-N.
And where's it at?
Isn't it Germany?
B-E-R-N. Bern? I don't know.
Bern? I thought it was pronounced Bern.
We'll see.
Fuck it. Leipzig.
Leipzig's a good one. I like Leipzig. Okay, let's see. I need a fantasy creature, preferably plural.
Griffins.
Griffins. Cool. Griffins. Griffins. I like griffins. Tyler, I need a made-up fantasy land. You can either make it up on the spot, or you can name a fantasy land.
Hey, what was the name of the fantasy land in Rick and Morty?
Oh, Beth's Happy Place?
Yeah.
What the fuck was that called? Oh,
God. You want, we can take a break and...
Yeah, Google it real quick for me. Froopy Land.
Okay, we're going to go with Froopy Land. For those of you out there, that is Beth's made-up place from episode 9 of Rick and Morty season 3, ABC's of Beth. Adam, I need a shape.
Rhombus.
That's a good one.
Nice. I like, you know, there's an H in rhombus. Tyler, I need a director.
A director?
Yeah.
Roman Polanski.
That's terrible. Okay. Adam, I need an actor.
John Woo.
John Woo is a director.
Oh, right. Who's the dude that acted, directed, and wrote The Room?
Tommy Wiseau.
Tommy Wiseau.
Cool. Tyler, I need an actress.
Tommy Wiseau.
No. Oh, hi, Mark.
How about
I'm a girl now.
Cate Blanchett.
Cate Blanchett, nice. That's
good. No, fuck that. Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Okay, that's even better. Adam, I need an actor.
Nicolas Cage.
Okay, and Tyler, I need an actress.
Another actress?
Yeah.
Nicolai Cage.
it would be Nicola Cage.
Nicole Kidman.
No, we're going to go...
Sarah Jessica Parker.
Yeah. No, we're not going to go with that. We're going to go with Elle Fanning.
I know who it is, but remind the audience who Elle Fanning is.
Elle Fanning is Dakota Fanning's younger sister. She's in the Neon Demon, Super 8. I just watched Super 8, so she's in my brain.
Adam, yeah. A deity, made up or real? Fuck, they're all made up.
You shouldn't have said made up because you're just going to make something up on the spot.
Sobek.
I had him do that last... Sobek, okay. I had him do it last night. Tyler, I need a number between 20 and 35.
36.
27.
27, okay. Adam, I need a weapon.
This dick.
No, we've already used that one tonight. Literally, we've already used that one tonight.
Padlock at the end of a chain.
Padlock and chain.
That's a good one.
It's like a beefy padlock, right? It's not like one of those little dinky ones.
No, it's like a master lock at the end of a chain that you just fucking flump people with.
Cool, cool. Tyler, I need an exclamation of triumph, like huzzah or...
Excelsior. What do you say when you come?
Booyah.
That's a cyborg thing. Okay. I need a DC comic. Adam?
Dead man.
Adam, or Tyler, I need a DC villain.
Dr. Savannah.
Savannah. And then, Adam, I need a DC hero.
Ooh. Speedy.
And then, Tyler, I need a DC hero.
Kung Fu Kid or Karate Kid. What the fuck? What was he in Countdown to Final Crisis?
Oh, the one from the Legion?
Yeah.
It's Karate Kid.
Karate Kid.
Kung Fu Kid is a way better name.
Adam, I need an adjective.
Hard.
This is it. Okay, cool.
Rock hard.
Cool, we'll go with that. All right, so the credits start to roll, and the last thing on screen is filmed with the permission from the Kirby family. No turns were harmed in the making of this motion picture. All characters are fictitious, and any resemblance to Bernie Sanders is completely coincidental and yet hilarious. The screen fades to black, and then we open up on a single house in suburban Leipzig. The camera zooms in on the house, and there is a single light on in the basement window. The camera continues to zoom in, and eventually you hear a voice over the shot. You face a slew of evil griffins. It is up to you to vanquish these creatures, or all of Froopyland is doomed. The scene of the house dissolves.
Are we sure we didn't write the opening to season 4 of Rick and Morty?
And the scene of the house dissolves, and we are now inside in the basement. There is a long rhombus table, and there are 5 figures around it. At the head of the table is Roman Polanski. He serves as the GM. Tommy Wiseau is serving as the trusty paladin. Mary Elizabeth Winstead is the rogue, with Nicolas Cage as the mage and Elle Fanning as the cleric. The paladin says, "By all the great goodness of Sobek, I smite you in all of your evil." The sound of dice rolling, 27 is uttered, and proud and triumphant screams are heard across the table. The GM says, your padlock and chain sails through the air and vanquishes your foe. You are successful. The party is safe and you are welcome to take your rest. The group around the table exchange congratulations and even a single booyah is heard. when suddenly there's a cut and we turn to another side of the room and Chris Hemsworth bursts through the door. Am I late? Have I missed it? He says, grabbing the nearest chair, still dressed in the same costume since the audience last saw him. The GM folds his colorful but still cardboard GM screen together, pulls out a many-buttoned backpack, and stuffs his stuff inside. We zoom in on the backpack to get a look at some of those buttons. There's a dead man, there's a Dr. Savannah, a Speedy, a Karate Kid, all DC buttons. Chris Hemsworth looks at his trusted GM, he's known him for years, straight in the face, and he just whispers, why? And the GM looks to Chris Hemsworth right in his eyes with a rock-hard determination and says, even DC Comics is greater than you. You, the lowliest of the Marvel Chrises. The camera fades to black and it says, Thor will return in Avengers Infinity War. Roman Polanski is a GM, huh?
I mean,
not bad.
Apparently.
I wonder if they're playing that game. They obviously have to play this in Leipzig because otherwise he'd be over here.
Exactly.
Good fit.
Actually, I think if he was in Leipzig, he might actually be over here.
Yeah. Extradition and all that. Well, that was fun. Hey, everybody out there, be sure to check out Science Nights this week. They have a brand new episode on beer science that we mentioned earlier, and they're going to have a brand new episode later on Thursday. Waiting for Players is going to be streaming a new game on Monday, and their episode of their podcast will be out on Wednesday. And then, you know, just be sure to check back on Comic Spree next week. And like Tyler said at the beginning, if you feel like talking with us, man, talk with us. We'll definitely respond
to
you.
Hit us up. And also, we did mention earlier, but stick around after the ending music.
After the outro, yeah.
For our own after credits scene.
Absolutely. So this is a little bit. We got an intro, like a stupid shit at the beginning, the show, outro, and stupid shit at the end.
Yeah, if you want to hear about Thor Ragnarok and us spoil the shit out of it.
For about 5 minutes? Yeah.
Yeah.
Right on. Well, anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you guys next week. Bye.
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 So I know that you guys just heard our excellent Mad Libs about the end scene of Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah, greatest, quickest Mad Lib.
But Tyler and I got actually some jollies to get over for Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah, because we actually did see it.
Korg is so cool. Korg is great. Okay, so spoilers galore.
Korg. We want to get a spaceship and get out of here?
Yeah. Hey, this is Meek. He's not dead. I thought you were dead, Meek.
Yeah, Korg.
You
want to
start a revolution? Ah, there goes Doug.
Yeah, bye, new Doug. Yeah, so Thor is fucking great.
So I would say this is okay. It's the best Thor that they've made.
Oh, hands down.
But it's also the most comedic Thor that they've made.
Oh yeah,
like they used Kat Dennings for jokes, you know.
Mew,
but this
Mew?
Is like all the jokes all the time.
Yeah, constantly. But the thing I like is that. It's not like
it's humorous to us. It's not them cracking jokes.
Yeah, like people make fun of Marvel movies, or not even make fun. They complain that it's just a bunch of quips and shit.
Yeah,
I mean sometimes it is, especially
like Guardians, Spider-Man,
like Iron Man's constantly making jokes. But this is a funny movie that's funny in like the situations that people learn and how they react to it.
Yeah, it's
they're not
like
cracking
they're
one-liners.
Yeah, they're not like. I am Thor, son of Odin, and he's like, Surtur, son of a bitch.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Some of the great little Easter eggs they threw in there, or little, like, not the Easter
oh
eggs, but little
God.
Fucking gags. Matt Damon as Loki was
yeah,
great.
Oh,
and
was
Sam
not...
Neill was Odin, and Luke Hemsworth was Thor.
Yeah, it was fantastic. That whole little play scene, that was great. I really enjoyed during the Thor and Hulk fight the references they were making to other movies, the two Avengers movies.
Oh right, yeah.
Like Thor's trying to be like Black Widow and calm him down.
Yeah. Or Loki getting excited about fucking.
Yeah, because like, it's a shot for shot exactly what the Hulk did to Loki.
Avengers Tower. He does that thing where like that in that scene in First Avengers, he grabs Loki when he's like monologuing and like beats him to the ground.
It's even exactly the same, like the way he grabs him. Is,
oh, it's like you cutting see, under him, like pulling yeah, the rug like, out.
Yeah,
from
like,
under
you
him.
See Loki, and then he pulls him down. And even though Thor's reaching out his hand, he gets pulled down by his foot. Yeah, same thing.
Exactly. And Loki's like, yeah, that's how that's feels.
Fucking great. And Loki was great in this.
He was.
You know what's kind of funny is that during the three Thor movies, if you look at them all in a row, Thor slowly goes from like this super heroic.
Macho heroic dude.
And he still is, but like he gets like a little more roguish the whole way through.
Sure. A little bit like sardonic almost.
Yeah.
Like he started to accept reality is what it is.
And through the three movies, Loki gets slightly more heroic the whole
way. He does, doesn't he?
Yeah. And it's just good that they both have these great little character arcs in the movie.
Hela.
Hela was amazing. Valkyrie was great.
Valkyrie was great too, yeah.
Oh man.
But
yeah.
Hela, man. Hela there's was something incredible. To be said about Cate Blanchett.
Yeah, she's fucking bomb.
Yeah, she's rad. And she just like Miles Greb, he said it's gonna be cool just to see her get a chance to like chew scenery.
Oh, and she does.
And oh my god, she does
wonderfully.
she just makes the scenes about her. That's it. Like that's all it is.
And okay, so I think the only thing about that movie that it's not that I don't like it, it's that I think it wasn't really deserved, is Scourge's...
Redemption?
Well, his death scene.
Oh, sure.
Where he's standing, like they did, there is a scene from the comics where Scourge is fighting off an army of the dead, and he's got two assault rifles standing on a pile of them just blasting, and it's like, if you look at his death scene, the whole thing in the comics is like...
You think it's unearned in the movie?
Yeah, like people ask... There is a quote, like a speech bubble in the actual issue that is like, when people ask what happened to Scourge, how did Scourge die? They say he stood alone at Gjallarbru, and that's enough. like it's just this like epic scene, and they do the same shot, but it's not really deserved.
Sure. I mean, it's got a gravitas in the comics because of he stood alone against an army, and in this he's like, I'm going to be good now.
Yeah. I mean,
you could argue it's like the one thing he does that's worthwhile.
I'm totally fine with like him having that arc. I just think that doing the like shot for shot was kind of, it didn't feel as heavy as it should have.
I agree.
But he was still a great character. I liked him.
For sure, man.
Behold my stuff.
Right? The shake weight joke.
Dude, yeah, there's so
the
many...
whole fight in Surtur was great, or the it's with Surtur, but it's in his domain, his realm. That's amazing. The end fight Fenrir and all of that. We are definitely going long on this though, so let's go ahead and end it with like one or two little last segments. Thor Ragnarok was
bitching.
Right. Maybe when Adam gets a chance to see it, you're muted, by the way. You won't. We can go a little bit more in depth on it.
Oh, I've seen it.
Oh, you saw Thor Ragnarok?
No, I haven't seen it.
You're a piece of shit. It's really just too bad that Thor dies at the end of it.
Oh, yep, everybody dies.
Yeah, it's too bad. Although that button scene at the end is really fucking good, though.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks again for listening to Comics Brew. Bye.
Bye.